All right, time to kick off. Thanks everyone so much for joining us today on the topic of fighting fire with fire, a coordinated defense against organized cybercrime. My name is Brian Martin, and I'm Director of Product Management at Integrity 360. And today I'm delighted to be joined by Kaelin Sachs. Kaelin is the CTO at Redshift Cybersecurity and currently heads up the managed services portfolio for Redshift, along with the threat intelligence function within Integrity 360. Just for people who don't know, Redshift Cybersecurity is an Integrity 360 company. He has spent a significant amount of time working directly with the financial services sector, doing cyber forensics, investigating active criminal syndicates, and within financial services intelligence sharing communities. And indeed, how cyber criminal organizations are organized and how we counter them with joined up intelligence-led defense is the topic for today's conversation. I just want to give a reminder that we will have time at the end to answer questions. So please submit your questions using the Q&A function on your screen. And also, if anyone wants to turn on subtitles, the captions function is available in multiple different languages. If you can't see it on your screen, if you click the More button, you'll see an option there to turn on captions. Kaelin, welcome. And I think this is going to be a very interesting conversation today.
Thanks, Brian. I think that was a very generous introduction that you've given me, but I think it's going to be a fun conversation. I've been at this for a little bit. I think I've been 18 years in this kind of role, and I think in that time I've seen some fun things. Keegan did a really great presentation for us, webinar session a couple of weeks back on the sophistication level that we're seeing within these cybercrime, these organized cybercrime groups. And I think ANSI did another one as a follow-up to that one in terms of how we should be structuring our threat hunting less away from just typical IOCs like hashes and that kind of thing, and actually moving to something more in the application layer, where adversaries are really exploiting our systems, not at the hacking kind of level, but that logging in and abusing built-in processes and abuse cases within our day-to-day business operations. So I think it's going to be a nice opportunity for us to have this kind of debrief and talk about some of the practical bits.
Yeah, interesting. And also, yeah, we often hear that statement that hackers don't always break in. They often log in as well. So let's set the scene anyway for, not everyone has seen Keegan's webinar. And just to let everyone know that is available on our website as a recording in case anybody wants to go deeper into the criminal organization there. But when we talk about organized cybercrime, what are we actually talking about? Because some people still have that maybe dated perception of a lone hacker in a dark room in a basement somewhere, or someone who's just opportunistically doing something. But I think the reality today is quite different, isn't it? Okay, I think I've lost your sound for some reason.
Sorry about that. But I was saying, yeah, that the reality is completely different to that. We've that particular image is what, 20 odd years out of date. And I think the longer this has gone on, the more we're seeing that these guys are looking like structured criminal enterprises. Thinking back to Keegan's presentation, he put up a really interesting slide where he covered kind of the defined roles within these organizations and these criminal organizations. And these guys have governance functions, they have operations, they've got HR functions, they've got finance, R&D teams, and one of the things I was really surprised about is, there was a stage just before that kind of 2017, 2018 kind of region where it was fairly reliable for you to be able to attribute adverse reactivities to a single entity based on how they behaved. And I think once we got to about that 2020, 2021, we were spotting the same kind of techniques being used across multiple adversaries. And these guys have obviously developed pretty advanced tracking capabilities, performance metrics, knowledge bases. And they're using this not just within their criminal enterprises, but they're using these as they move, as they leave the employment of one criminal syndicate and move to another criminal syndicate. They're taking this knowledge with them, and they're finding really interesting ways to advance their operations much faster than they've done before. I think over the last couple of over the last 2 years, we've been seeing the integration of AI and automation that they're using to kind of push up that scaling even faster. But I don't think that's really driving their growth. I think their growth has very much been driven around how they're structured, and the more we look at the kind of stuff that we're seeing in terms of how these criminal syndicates are organized, without good context, you'd think we were describing mid-size enterprise,
Yeah, and it's interesting that they have all of the similar characteristics that you might find in many of the business we all work in and encounter every day. Yeah, we'll go a bit deeper on that later, but in the meantime, just to quickly first go into what's the implication for us on the defender side with the this growing up and this kind of organization of these criminal enterprises.
Well, I think, look, the implication for us as defenders is that adversaries absolutely don't care how we organize ourselves. In fact, most of the time it's to their advantage that we don't organize ourselves. And just from experience, when I look at most of the organizations who have built what we like to believe is really advanced threat detection capabilities, we're still seeing that most of those organizations still have a very unstructured approach to threat intelligence, to threat hunting. We have a fraud team that operates in isolation, a risk team that sets policy in isolation, trying to play catch up with whatever whack-a-mole thing AI is spitting out at any given point in time. Governance teams that are trying to enforce policies, a threat hunting team that really hasn't spoken to any of the other guys across the business. It's so fragmented, it's so all over the place. And I think one of the things that I quite liked when I was listening to the webinar which Ansi put together on the threat hunting side was she said, it's really interesting that the business team is mandated to do security awareness training, but we never find that the security teams are mandated to do business awareness training, and it becomes
That's very good.
fascinating because when you think about it, we're trying to defend a business that we have absolutely no idea how they operate, how they make money, what the long-term strategy of the organization is, where we're going, and you end up with this very whack-a-mole kind of approach, where we're just very reactive in our approach to TI, both collection, sharing, execution, that kind of thing. And it makes us slow. It makes us slow to react when something is happening. Very often we can't predict how our SOC teams are going to be responding to an incident because, this is maybe the first time they've responded to a major breach on System X. We've just never looked at it before. And so I think this creates a problem for us where most of the technical know-how, the technical muscle, the process, the skills for how to do the threat hunting resides, number one, within the SOC team. The application knowledge resides in the development team, but the business owns the process, and we've got this highly organized adversary that's going up against a very fragmented defense team. And I think that's where the mismatch is. That's where we're losing. You know, we're losing not on the technology or capability side, but we're losing from a structure perspective. And that's where we're struggling at the moment.
So let's go into that in a bit more detail then, because you mentioned silos between the SOC, the fraud team, threat intelligence, threat hunting, etc. So why does that happen? And it seems quite obvious thing that you would try to solve to break down that silo. So why aren't organizations getting that right?
I think it comes down to just the way organizations are structured, right? So you have fraud, risk, the cyber SOC teams, TI teams, IR teams, the forensics teams. We all have different reporting lines across an organization, you know. So we've got a group of people reporting to a different bunch of executives. Both the people in those teams as well as the executives themselves have different KPIs, different things they need to drive within an organization. I think, you know, when you look at it, you know, our SOC teams are typically measured on how many alerts do you attend per day, right? Did you meet your target of doing 50 alerts per day? Your fraud teams are looking at how many investigations are you plowing through in a day? Your TI teams are being measured on how many reports are you producing as an output, you know? While the measurement themselves is not wrong, I think none of those individual KPIs add up to something that produces a coordinated outcome, right? So you still have organizations who look at their SOC team as as an IT function. And who treat their intelligence teams as kind of human versions of threat feeds, right? And this lack of context or authority that the threat intelligence teams have, your SOC teams have, within the broader business context to affect change. I think that's where we're starting to see the scenario where, you know, fraud teams are just comfortable to high five when you close an investigation. You know, money was lost. Yes, we know how the money was lost, and then we high five ourselves and we think we've done a great job. You know, but I think it's not really in the business interest for TI teams to continue saying, yeah, we know how this happened, or we saw that alert, or yes, we are aware that this mule account was being used for fraudulent purposes. I think we need to start making that shift to saying that we've learned some things about how adversaries are operating. We understand their infrastructure, and we can start stopping an incident from happening. You know, we have to start being able to measure how many incidents are we preventing versus just saying, we knew that was going to happen in the first place, you know, closing off tickets, I guess.
And have you seen, is this something you see play out a lot with within customers and organizations you work with? Have you any examples you can share of that?
I think it is pretty common, right? I think, but most of us here would put up our hands and say, well, you know, we've had a few incidents like that in some form or the other. But you know, across many organizations, you see the scenario where some teams produce really great monthly threat intel reports, and other teams are taking that kind of intel and using that as change. You know, they may not have as good a threat intel program, but every single indicator kind of drives some defense or change or something of that kind of sort within the organization. And so when something has happened, you have the ability to pick out an indicator, not just a hash or a domain or URL or something like that, but you have a way of figuring out, well, this particular adversary operates in the following manner, and we can affect change within our organization to counter that.
So if these silos are a problem, then so what's the shift that needs to happen? I mean, it's probably the clues in that in the question in that you need to break those down. But how do you characterize this move from where many organizations are to where they need to get to?
I think that move is pretty much characterized by that shift from saying, well, we've got really good alerting and detection capability to saying we have intelligence-led fraud prevention capabilities, right? We have to be able to switch from this fragmented operation where everybody's kind of doing their thing in isolation to being able to say, we have this integrated model that exists not just across our organization, but externally with our partners in whether that be law enforcement or within the segment, maybe across the side, the financial services vertical, that kind of thing. But the ability for intelligence or cyber intelligence to directly change operational behavior, I think that's the key. If intelligence is not changing how your teams respond to fraud, then it really isn't of any value in an organization. We may as well just have really good alert feeds and have hope that the tech is really good on the detection side.
So this might be a good time then just to check with the audience then as to are they, how are they responding to threat, good threat intelligence signals, and are they actually making operational changes based on that intelligence? So if you could run the poll there now, and put it up on the screen, and we'll for some, if your team receives a high confidence threat intelligence alert, how long does it actually take to translate that into something like a new or modified detection or control? So is it like on a straight away in a couple of hours, takes a few days, weeks, only when we doing a post-mortem on the breach? Or are you actually supposed to do anything with that? So let's have a look and see what the sentiment is there. We'll just give people a few seconds to get their answers in. Okay, so we've only got 24% responded yet. So if you could encourage everyone to give an answer if you can, and try and get as broad-based a response as possible. But we're up at 26% now. So okay, we're over 30%. So we're starting to get some more decent numbers in. 36%. All right, so let's have a quick look at those numbers. So Galen, are you surprised? So we have 55% responding within hours, 18% within days, 18% within weeks, and 9% going scratching their heads going, "Oh, I didn't realize we're supposed to do something with those signals." How do you feel about those responses?
Yeah, look, I think these responses are going to be very dependent on the nature of the intelligence and the control that it's affecting, right? I think you'll find quite a lot of variance when you're looking at threat intelligence that goes along the lines of, hey, this following domain that's impersonating your organization, or sending out phishing mails across the organization, how do we react to those? I think most organizations are fairly good at responding to those, right? But where it becomes a lot more interesting is, I mean, we've seen tons of warnings now on shadow AI projects popping up in most organizations. I think that's been ongoing for years almost, months almost, and I'm not sure there are any organizations who've formulated a good response to how do we detect and control shadow AI capabilities within our organization just yet. I think we're still kind of sitting at the governance tier trying to figure out whether is this something we should respond to? How should we respond to it? And I think this is again one of those things where the answer is so fragmented across an organization. You don't have a central function that has the ability to operate across that entire layer, determine well what do we do right now, what works, what doesn't, what is the needs of the business, and how do we allow them to continue their business in a secure manner? How do we be security enablers? as opposed to just another gateway.
That's a good example of, intelligence and insight that, the response to it is fragmented or not sufficient. So let's help then people think about what does a good model look like. So what is the model that we need to build to get in place an intelligence-led security operation?
So there's a really nice quote that I've seen from one of the US Army generals, and he said, "A good plan violently executed now is better than a perfectly perfect plan executed next week." Right? I think what I love most about that is it kind of syncs everything together into you've just got to have a pretty solid plan. You need to be able to prioritize, and then you need to act. Perfect can wait if you've got something that's good. But when we look at this model for how we should be handling threat intelligence and how we should be handling fraud detection across our stack, I think we have to stop looking at tons and tons and tons of data. And we have to be able to collect information broadly. We have to be able to fuse that information to formulate intelligence, and then we need to be able to execute on that. If your threat intel is not giving you an actionable outcome, it doesn't really serve a purpose in the organization. And if the function consuming the threat intelligence has no execution capability, then again, we're high-fiving in the name of what the regulators are mandating, as opposed to doing something that's effective.
Yeah, so it's quite clear that you need to take the relevant data, as you're saying, and parsing it down. You need to be able to, in a position to, and actually take action, and figure out what those actions are, and then execute on that. So, do you want to just go into a little bit more detail about those kind of those three main areas of the model?
Yeah, I think c collection serves as kind of the foundation of what we're looking at, right? You can't manage what you don't measure, and you can't measure what you don't see. So you need to have a really broad data set. And I think these need to span not just, core firewalls and EDR and, those kind of logs. I think PCAPs aren't really useful at the detections stage. I think they serve a really nice purpose post-mortem when we need to do forensics work. So, they serve a purpose there. But I think we don't really need large data sets, but we need a broad one. So we need to be able to collect data from critical business applications that's context relevant. Things like Apache logs from your web server. They don't contain enough detail to tell us from at an application level whether someone has logged in, whether they've done a transfer, whether the payment was initiated, what other systems were they logged into at the time. We really need to be able to collect data that aligns with the business processes, right? So collecting stuff that allows us to repeat the user journey essentially for each of our critical applications. And then we need to be able to fuse that data across the organization and enrich it with other data sources. So at that fusion layer, you really need to be able to say, well, someone was logged into our CRM solution and was logged into our core banking platform at the same time to facilitate a transfer or the other. And there's very seldom a scenario where you've got someone working front office in a bank who's going to facilitate a transfer without opening a customer's profile on your CRM solution first, right? Because the customer tends to be sitting in front of you, or you've got a in a call center environment, you've got a call that's come through. So being able to enrich that data across your entire stack, that essentially becomes the bridge between having the intel and being able to do something about it. Because without data across your stack, you really only have this single view. And it's really hard to pick out, well, is this fraudulent? Is this normal for this kind of user? And I think this is also one of the hardest steps in the entire model, because you're trying to do something that's cross-functional. You know, there's a cross-functional ownership, there's shared workflows, you know, and with those shared workflows, you also have playbooks that we need to be able to look at in the event of an incident. And this is when we get more into that execution phase. It's owned cross-functionally across the team, right? So here you really need good detection engineering. You need good anti-fraud controls. You need good incident response. You need good threat hunting. But that execution phase shouldn't be reactive. It shouldn't be alert driven. It should be proactive, right? And I think, I don't know, probably from your experience, you've got a lot of stories here, but I don't know how many breach reports there were in last year where, you know, it's clear that an alarm went off at some stage during the incident cycle. You know, there was a phishing email that was sent, and half the users in the organization spotted the phishing email, reported it as phishing, and sent it on its way. And yet there was one guy who's a sysadmin who needed to get something done, and he responded to it and shared creds, and you know, everything kind of fell to pieces from there. So, you know, that ability for us to correlate data and act on it very quickly, I think that's really important for us. That feedback loop also matters here, because once we find something, how does that go in? How does that change how we collect logs? How does it change how we enrich logs within the organization? And then does it drive response again? So we have to be able to look through, you know, execution, fusion or integration, and then execution. But we need to be able to build that as a continuous improvement cycle, and it needs to be something that's cross-functional.
So you've got those clear kind of three layers in the model of the collection, the fusion, the execution. You talked about some of the challenges and some of the layers because it is cross-functional. So ideally then, is there an ideal accountability model for that? Like who should be accountable for each of those? You know, is it security? Is it CIO? Is it risk? Where do you see it working best, if you like, for that accountability?
I think we're at a stage where it's number one, it's not a one size fits all kind of scenario, right? And I think we're at a stage where it's less important who owns each phase than it is to make sure that each phase has an owner, each phase has a defined process, shared KPIs, and that we need to understand that we succeed or we fail as a collective, you know. And I think this is coming back to your question a little bit closer here. You know, it doesn't really matter which title within the organization owns that information. You know, it needs to be a cross-functional capability. It needs to have the group-wide backing. And I think at a mature level, it means we need to have dedicated teams who do this. And these teams need to have, you know, shared tooling. They need to have shared case management platforms. It's a really big one. And we've got some fun stories that I can speak of very personally here, but you have these scenarios where, you know, your fraud teams are working on a case management tool, but the incident response teams or the threat hunters aren't allowed access to that case management tool. And so they don't even know the kinds of fraud that exist within an organization, you know. And I think when you're struggling at that kind of layer, I think driving cross-functional response playbooks are even more of a challenge. So I think, yeah, to bring it back down, it's we need to just have an owner, a dedicated function with cross-functional capabilities. You know, maybe it could be a hybrid type scenario where you've got members representatives from different teams within the organization. Or it could be the kind of scenario where you've got just one governing oversight capability. But I think, you know, when we start looking at it from that KPIs perspective, which essentially drives the behavior across an organization, you know, that fragmentation creates so many problems, because You've got the scenario where a fraud analyst has a vested interest in certain kinds of behaviors, right? Phishing is great for me when I used to be a fraud analyst once upon a many moons ago. I could do like a million of those in a day. Case comes in, we look at it, we look at the IP address that we see the authentications from, we attribute to all the other IP addresses that authenticated from. All the other phishing cases that we know from that IP address, and we say, yeah, customer was phished, case closed, next one, And then my stats and my KPIs look fantastic as a fraud analyst, but I don't know whether that's the kind of thing that we really want to drive as a behavior across the organization.
Yeah, in my experience, it's often not even or not just the technology and tools silos that matter. Often it is the organizational, side of things, people, politics, lack of alignment, lack of shared goals and incentives can often be the barrier to a joined up operation. Because obviously, if they're measured and rewarded separately, there's really no incentive to integrate it. So jumping into information sharing then, and what works and what doesn't work, looking externally then, because we've talked a little bit about internally, internal silos, politics, technologies, stacks, etc. What about the industry level information sharing? And you've worked with sharing communities in the financial sector in the past. So what's your assessment about that sort of cross-industry collaboration? Does it actually work?
Can it work? Absolutely. Does it work? I think sometimes it's a little bit more hampered by politics and bureaucracy than we really wish it were. But I think that absolutely it can work. The reason these kinds of things fail is we either have legal barriers, trust barriers, lack of standardization or integration between the various businesses when we share intel. And I mean it's difficult because most organizations struggle to share intel within the organization, and now you're bringing external parties that have different systems and different data sets and different rules, and the KPIs across businesses are just never going to be a thing, right? I think we can clear that one up right up front, but a lack of good execution really just hampers it quite significantly. We've got this really slow response model that we take on. And all that threat intel that we get at an industry level, we always view it with a little bit of skepticism, like, oh, is this good? What are they hiding? We don't want to share what really happened because we don't want to let everybody know that we kind of had bad detection capability. But we also then on the receiving end, you get particular threat intel and you're like, oh, well, what aren't they sharing? What's missing? What needs looking at? This will never happen to us. Our tech stack is different, and so this just drives a slow response and a lack of shared accountability across these businesses.
So, do you have it? What does good look like? And it'd be great if you could share maybe any examples or war stories from your own experience.
Yeah, look, I think I've got a truckload of stories, but I think the one that really stands out for me was in, I think it was about 2009, 2010, somewhere there. South Africa went through a real phishing crisis in the banking sector, right? And we had more phishing cases than you could shake a stick at. I think I was traveling for forensics purposes every other week. As a forensics person, I was even double hatting as a fraud analyst at the time, helping the fraud team work through the phishing cases that were coming through. We were doing baiting exercises late at night when we got phishing URLs come in. I mean, we were doing anything and everything that we could to kind of get some coordinated response to figure out how we handle phishing. I mean, it was a crisis. We had we had a couple of scenarios where I think the banking sector regulators and ombudsman had kind of stepped in and said to the banking sector, listen, you guys are you guys are throwing this online platform out to customers, and you're not giving the tools they need to pr protect themselves. And this is putting the customer at risk. It's becoming an unacceptable level of risk here, right? And it created a crisis for them. And I think at the time, I remember when I was working with one of the fraud guys, they added me to one of their fraud groups on BlackBerry Messenger, and I was getting BBM messages from some of our fraud partners at other banks who were saying, "Hey, we've seen this IP address, doing phishing things. Are you guys seeing the same?" And we could log into our systems and see, "Oh, listen, this guy's logged into these 20 accounts," and we were taking action against those. And I think what really stood out for me at that particular time was, this wasn't just we had lots of customers that were being defrauded. This was to the point where, the executives within the bank I was working at the time, they would step in and say, "We compete on product, we compete on service, we compete on pricing, but we don't compete at the customer's expense, right? And we don't compete on security." And it was unprecedented. It was unprecedented wording in the banking sector for us, because every bank, even today, is still super secretive about how they run their operations, what's in their stack. We don't want anybody to know who's got more fraud than somebody else, because that could be, if that leaks out, there's a risk that all of our customers will go to the bank with less fraud and that kind of thing. And I think it was such a privilege for me to actually watch that take place, because I say privilege, I mean privilege in hindsight, right? I think at the time I didn't view it that way because I was working late hours, but it actually was a privilege for me to witness what really good threat intelligence and a collective response action looks like, because we were facing an existential crisis, and the banks just weren't going to take that sitting down, and not at the expense of the customer. And we achieved something that I think really, really stood out. It was an unsolvable problem at the time. I remember we had ideas, we had POCs, we had war rooms, we had a whole bunch of different sessions running concurrently, trying to solve this unsolvable thing. And I think if you look at it immediately post that session, I think we went through, it was about a 6 month crisis that we went through at the time. And, working on this problem collectively, eventually we hit a point where, phishing dropped. If I say tenfold, it'd be an understatement, but phishing is now just pretty much run-of-the-mill fraud for a bank. It's much the same as you'd view credit card fraud, for example. It doesn't stand out at all. And that coordinated response, I think, is fantastic to witness, because it shows that when you take coordinated action against kind of problem like this, we can do really cool things.
Yeah, I really
Really
love
in
that idea
comparison.
that we compete on everything except security. That's a nice statement. That actually I think could transfer into a lot of other sectors as well, if we had the right thinking in place. And the idea of joined up intelligence led defense is obviously powerful internally within the organization, but even stronger when you add that cross sector collaboration into the mix. I guess the only thing about the sharing across industry is that are there any legal or privacy constraints or concerns if you're sharing information that might potentially, be sensitive from that perspective?
Yeah, look, I think it's a fair concern, and it comes up a lot. I think it even comes up internally in an organization. How do we manage that? But I think the short answers are we don't really share raw data. We don't share PII. We don't share that kind of thing. What we really need to be sharing is the tools, techniques, and procedures. The procedures is often the one that gets left out. But we need to be sharing this, and we're seeing this adversary doing this kind of behavior. look out for these. And on the response side, you need to be able to then collect that information, not the indicator, but the TTP, and then be able to bake that into your response capabilities. So I think if my view is, if regulators can work with banks to fight fraud, and if we can navigate GDPR restrictions for the purposes of AI to make more pictures of our cats, then absolutely there's a legislative answer for or legal answer for how we handle privacy things when it comes to anti-fraud and threat intelligence capabilities.
All right. And you did mention, moving on a little bit to kind of relate another topic. You mentioned earlier about signals around use of shadow AI, but then in today's world we can't have conversation about hardly any topic in security or even any other topic without talking about AI. And it's evident that attackers are clearly using it, and the models are getting more powerful, that they can be leveraged by attackers in terms of automation, chaining exploits and attack steps, AI-driven efficiency. But the topic here is fighting fire with fire. So again, on the AI side, that's another way of thinking about it. What's the role of AI on the defender side in today's world?
Look, I think we've got an organization full of AI realists on our end. But I think, look, AI is fantastic at helping us with correlation, with enrichment, with prioritization kind of things. And it does a lot of heavy lifting in terms of reducing our triage, picking out signals quicker. It's really good at being able to keep that detection logic updated and keeping things moving forward. But just more scale without the structure is just more noise or more mess. I think we need to start at that structure layer to make sure we've got the structure right. And then we need to look at AI as our scaling capabilities. How do we refine those processes before we inject the AI is really important there.
Yeah, I heard the same argument around automation years ago that, you can't just introduce automation. You need to know what it is you want to automate and you need to define that. So kind of similar here. You need that structure, that data collection layer you talked about, that fusion layer. AI can help with that, but if you haven't got that in place, then you don't have that fundamental underpinning, and then I guess you can't scale it then with AI either.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, yeah, because I
And
the adversaries are using it, and they're we see we've seen large scale autonomous attacks starting to come onto the environment last year, so it is a scaling capability for them as well.
well, I think maybe if I can just add to that one, one of the things that we're early on, we mentioned a lot around, having structure, having good playbooks. But I think, that adds, it's something that our adversaries are doing, right? So they've got really well-defined playbooks. They've got great structure. But I know most organizations that have grown from small enterprise to mid or large size enterprise will tell you that, listen, one of the downsides of that is a certain level of rigidity that comes with that improved process. But I think this is something that we can absolutely win at. If we hunt for their structure, we find that it's really easy to pick up the signals of what fraud looks like. And I also think that it becomes more expensive for them to change. If they're losing flexibility at this, if they're losing flexibility for advanced capability and structure and repeatable fraud type scenarios, if they're losing that flexibility, then we've got to make it really expensive for them when we pick it up, right? Don't just look at what the dodgy domain is and block it on your edge firewall. Go shut down the domain. Don't just look at how they're perpetrating fraud in the organization. Go shut down the mule accounts. Go shut down, report all of those fraud incidents to central bodies that can actually take those down quickly, because then it becomes expensive. You know, those organizations need to buy the operational capabilities to execute fraud and then to launder money. And so the further up that pyramid of pain we can get, where we're not just dealing with IOCs, but we're dealing with TTPs, you know, or indicators of attack, then I think we're onto something winning there.
And how do people, it could be overwhelming for some people to know what to do first. So where, you said, executing with violence is better than waiting for next week to get it perfect. So where should they actually start?
I think, look, as a starting point, you need to start with what you already have. And just to be able to build some kind of actionable intel from there, right? So look at what you've got across the organization, and run a POC, you know, set up a small team who's got some cross-organizational capability to look at one abuse case scenario, and just run a POC in that and see kind of what the outputs look like, what the successes are. And I think once you're able to demonstrate value, getting organizational buy-in is usually the easier bit from there.
Okay, that's a great start. Yeah, pick one use case, do a POC, and even just using the data you already have, and then you learn so much from that to evolve. So if there are organizations that feel, I mean, we had a lot of people there saying that they already are set up to execute within minutes or hours of intelligence signals coming in. So if they are a little bit more mature, then what's the next level for those types of organizations?
I think for those kind of organizations, it is about becoming intelligence-led, right? So doing proactive threat hunting, changing business operations in response to the threat landscape, and just making sure that there is integration between your threat intelligence teams, your threat hunting teams, your incident response teams, fraud, governance, risk. And I think if you're really mature at that kind of level, then you've got to be able to go external. You know, do you have the ability to escalate these kind of things to a law enforcement partner? Are you sharing information at an industry level? Have you involved your regulators? You know, because they've got fantastic capability to break down silos in response to this kind of thing. So the further up that maturity chain you get, it's not really about changing the model. But it's just expanding the scope of where you apply it.
Okay, Kellen, we've covered some great content and topics there, and I want to leave a little bit of time at the end just for some questions. So, just to summarize, I suppose if someone walks away from today with one or two things to genuinely change how they think, what would you like them to be?
Sure. I think organized crime groups are not successful because they have better tooling than us, right? We've seen their tooling. It's just not all that fancy. But they're successful because they're better organized than us. And until we start to match that levels of coordination and deliberate approaches to how we design our security functions, I think we're going to be struggling. We're going to continue to lag behind on that. And I don't think it's something that necessarily requires an unlimited budget, but you know, it does require us to kind of set direction somewhere and then start making deliberate steps toward that. So we're not going to drive industry level change overnight, but I think just being able to tag a model that works and build on that over time, I think that's going to be pretty critical for anybody who's listened here.
Okay, that's great, Kellen. And we do know that if you look on the threat actor side, you've got the nation state actors, the cyber criminal groups, you've got the hacktivists, and there's an increasing blurring lines between those organizations. They're collaborating, they're sharing tools, techniques, threat intelligence. So, and that is helping them be more effective in their nefarious activities. So it seems intuitive that on the defender side, we need to do the same. Would you agree?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, but there's so many examples. Even if you just look at it from a malware perspective, you know, one particular piece of malware develops a certain capability. One ransomware adversary develops a double extortion model, and you know, within days, we're seeing tons of them that have this double extortion model baked into it. So that kind of sharing and collective learning, I think, is going to be important. That's critical.
Okay, brilliant. So I see a few questions have come in. I'd like to ask the audience if they have any further questions. Please put them in the Q&A and we'll address them in a moment. I'm just going to, while those additional questions are coming in, I just want to share some upcoming events and webinars. So on Wednesday, the 7th of July, we have a webinar on the reality of Mythos and modern exposure. We've all heard about Mythos and the model that was too dangerous to release. And then since the release of GPT-5.5, as well as Fable 5, which then has been withdrawn for kind of unclear or contested reasons. So we're all aware of this increasing model capability to discover exposure. So we're going to cover that, the reality of it, you know, how much of it is do we really need to worry about, and how do we address it, and counter that emerging threat. And then on top of that, we're continuing our security first in-person conferences. We've done, I think it's 10 to date around the globe, and we still got another few coming. So we've got Paris next week, Brussels in September, Canada in October, and potentially Barbados as well, to be confirmed. So keep an eye out for those dates, if those are anywhere in your regions from where you're joining. All right, so I'm going to go into the Q&A now and look at some of these questions. Okay, first question, very, very topical on the conversation. How do we break down the silos between SOC fraud and threat intelligence?
I think we need to try not to take this as, you know, trying to eat the whole elephant in one bite, but you know, it's something that happens over time. So quickly trying to change organizational structure and that kind of thing, I think, is going to be super complicated. But if you can try to bake in some shared outcomes, you know, how the SOC is measured, KPIs, workflows, even case management tooling, you know, just having shared tooling across the organization. I think that's super effective at taking on those silos.
Very good. And next question is, we already receive threat intelligence feeds, you know, with presumably they're good quality commercial feeds or whatever, combined with a variety of potentially open source feeds. Is that not enough? We've got those already baked into our stack.
I think the feeds on their own don't really change your operational risk. You know, most of the feeds have the kind of information that's there, that machines are great at consuming. You know, computers are great at consuming tons and tons and tons of hashes. You know, a million hashes come into your SOC, and you know, your EDR is fantastic at blocking those. But I think that on its own doesn't really change the outcome if you're not able to act on it. You know, we spoke of this earlier in the conversation where we said, listen, there's so many reports of alarms going off, tons of them across an organization, only for us to, at a much later stage, discover that we were part of some kind of breach. And I think until we're able to decisively act, violently execute a good plan, I think it's not really going to change the outcome that much.
The topic of legal and privacy constraints is in the next question. This audience member say they can't actually share data due to legal or privacy concerns. We kind of covered that earlier, didn't we? That the type of data being shared often isn't in scope for legal constraints, if you like.
Yeah, look, I think you need to be able to share in to be able to share indicators and share patterns, share tactics, and that legal complexity starts to fall away when you bring legal into the conversation pretty early on, so you use them as a design partner, they're not just a gatekeeper, and see what's possible.
That's a good way of thinking about it, yeah. Because they want to encourage that, typically, we find anyway. And then last question, and we're just coming up on time, so we'll finish with this one. This sounds like it may require some investment. So how do you justify that investment to your executives or senior management?
Look, I was I started my career many, many moons ago, long before the days of BBM even. But I was a data guy. I was a data analyst, and I think naturally my answers are going to come toward that kind of metrics looking answer. And we need to be able to demonstrate our capabilities here. So, we should be able to measure what are the outcomes of our intelligence activities. How do we know that they work? What works? What doesn't? And we've got to be able to show that to the investment team here. Those traditional SOC metrics that we have in terms of alerts per day or reports produced per week, I don't think they add that much value. We really need to be looking at how much money are we saving the organization, and how much fraud are we preventing. I think those are the winning stats. And start off with a POC. Nothing demonstrates value like a good POC, right?
Yeah, maybe it goes back to Ansi's statement about security need business awareness training and need to translate those investment requests
Absolutely.
and ROI projections in business terms, rather than necessarily in pure security metrics, if you like.
Yeah, exactly that.
Okay, Kaelin, listen, we're just about coming up on time, so thanks so much for joining today and sharing your experience and your knowledge. I think it was extremely valuable. And also thanks to everyone who joined us today. Really appreciate you coming on. You will get an email with links to the recording, and if you have any further follow-on queries you have, by all means, feel free to reach out through your contacts into ourselves. So have a great day, everyone, and thanks so much for joining.
Yes.
Bye-bye.